Hi, Thor. I am so thrilled to get to speak with you about The Damned. I was riveted, absolutely riveted, watching this film. It is chilling. It is frightening. The way that you have built upon mythical lore to create this story, along with Jamie, your screenwriter, absolutely fantastic. But then you work with your cinematographer in particular, Eli Aronson, and give us these visuals that celebrate the winter light with the icy blues, the whites, the grays, and you contrast that with candlelight, which gives great shadow and almost like a half and half life and death kind of metaphor. You build this world so beautifully using the location and the weather. The weather works to your advantage so well because it metaphorically speaks to the weight that is on Ava's shoulders this entire time of having to essentially wrangle and command all of these men, but also the weight of the weather and fog and snow and limited visibility or emptiness as far as the eye can see. It's very insular, as if shrouding the community. On every level, Thor, it's a visual stunner. It's a psychological thriller, and I love it.
Thank you so much. I mean, beautiful words, kind words. Thank you so much.
Where do you even start? I mean, the old world, the mythology of the Dragoor is fantastic. And every culture has something like that. I love the interpretation here, whereas instead of like a ghostly specter, we're looking at zombies, essentially.
Yes,
which is which works really well for your makeup and your puppetry and your prosthetic department, and really gets to showcase terror. It puts images, non-specific images, to the psychological terror that each of these people are seeing, be it driven by guilt, hatred, fear, and it's fantastic. But where do you even start to take the page and bring it to life on screen?
Yeah, it's like, if you exactly, where do you get your ideas from? It's very difficult to kind of, I think a lot of it is, you know, Icelandic storytelling. A lot of it is the stories we hear as children, the mythology of some of it. The Dragoor, as you said, is an old Icelandic mythical being, you know, and that, like you said, the difference back in the day, what the mythology was, it was much closer to a zombie. It was much more, it was a rotting corpse that came back to seek revenge on the people that wronged them. And for me, that's a very striking image mm-hmm. of a rotting corpse that's come to take what is theirs. And then you have the old Icelandic history, which is, there was actually a ship from the Basque region, from Spain, that sunk off the shores of Iceland, and they survived. They swam to shore, but when they got to the Icelandic beach, Icelanders Iceland was like a third world country. They were so poor that they decided to kill the Basque people and steal or pillage everything they could from the shipwreck, hoping that no one would ever find out what they did. And there was one survivor, so everyone knew what they did. So you have these kind of old stories that somehow you can find this kind of gel or cartilage to put together, and then you start to find your lead character, and then the landscape of Iceland, and you have The Damned.
How the location is so important here, Thor. How difficult was it to find the specific location that you chose for this. I mean, you needed coastline, but you also needed mountains. You needed snow, lots and lots of snow. And you needed enough space so that your production designer, so that Frosty could build these fishing huts, these decrepit-looking, weathered fishing huts. So you had requirements that are not typical of a lot of films. So I'm curious how you even found this location.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of driving around, I can tell you that. a lot of weekends driving, looking. I kind of knew the West Fjords. I had lived there for a little bit. I actually got snowed in there a few years before we started developing this. And I was actually there writing another project, and I got snowed in. So quickly I could see, even today, you know, the elements can get you.
Mm-hmm.
We just kind of drove around. We met the people in these small fishing villages, and we started to kind of, you know, ask around, you know, do you know a place that looks like this or that? And slowly you just start building this kind of catalog of beautiful places. Are able to capture the beauty that you see on the day with the camera. And I think we were quite lucky with being able to do that.
Oh, I think you did. And a lot of people, you don't think about how beautiful a barren landscape like this is, the purity of it, and then the terror that we see unfolding through this story. And it's a great contrast and juxtaposition that we see unfold. But then what you and your DP, what you and Eli have developed with your visual grammar is just stunning. Now, I know how challenging it is shooting in extreme cold. I know how challenging it is with shooting snow. Just because you want a tactile sense. You don't want something that's just flat white. So you really need those shades of white. And yes, white has shades, and you need the camera to capture that. How did you and Eli approach this from a visual standpoint and develop your visual grammar?
Well, I think it all starts with just, you know, drinking a lot of coffee and meeting as much as you can. And we had a long prep period, the two of us, where we watched films, we talked about things. You know, There Will Be Blood, the Paul Thomas Anderson film, came up. We started watching that. Obviously, there's no snow in that, but we started looking at the how he shot the vistas of Texas, and the how the interiors looked. You know, where are the shadows? How dark does he go? You know, is it single source? So we slowly start to build. Oh, we're going to shoot all our interiors with candlelight. Okay. Do we go as crazy as Barry Lyndon? No. Okay. Maybe, you know, the lens is a little bit quicker these days. So we slowly build this kind of, you know, this language together. And he really likes to kind of shoot this kind of painterly still image. And I like to move the camera. So I think we were a great kind of pairing of sensibilities in a way where, but in the end, we always just asked ourselves, what is Eva doing? Because the film is all shot through her perspective.
Yes.
And what is Eva seeing? How is she feeling? And thus the camera, if she's moving, we move with her. So that became kind of a guiding light of the visual language.
Well, you mentioned something, a phrase that I dearly love and I don't see enough of in a lot of films. The painterly look, and that's exactly what we have in so much of this. You can lift so many of the candlelit scenes inside a hut, and it is so painterly. It almost has with the way the candlelight is with the shadow on the other half of the face or the frame. Very much equates to a Vermeer almost, and the way he used light. So I see so much of that within this film, which just adds to the beauty of what you're capturing. And something else that you and Eli do is you really avoid close-ups. You don't go in on extreme close-ups. You keep everything in mid shots to wide shots. The wide shots out on the shoreline are stunning. Stunning.
Oh, thank you.
And they speak so loudly as to what is unfolding within the community. But the interiors and the way you keep those, and even some on the outside, in mids, which is where your framing comes into play. You've got beautiful composed framing here, Thor.
Oh, thank you.
And you wouldn't expect that in a film like this, but you and Eli, you use door frames. You use window frames. And even some of the exteriors, you use the mountains as a framing device. Yeah. Was all of that, did you storyboard that out? Were those just happenstances that it's like, hey, this looks great? Or did you really plan those out?
No, we didn't storyboard them like that. I think it all goes down to what are the sensibilities of the two people working together? What are my sensibilities? What are his sensibilities? And we wanted to find a timelessness with this. And with some of the timelessness, you start to see what is a close-up in this reference film, you know, maybe an old film that it has a timeless quality to it. And for me, like all their close-ups were medium shots. They're not making stuff for TV. They're making stuff for the big screen.
Yeah.
And you can read those things. And yeah, we do go close, but when we do go close, you feel it. You're really in her face. You're really in her eyes. So. For us, it was finding that language together. We knew we wanted to have a throwback quality to the film, a tactileness to the film that maybe if you see it, you would struggle knowing when it was made or when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
That was my main thing. I didn't want you to feel, oh, that's definitely an early 2000s film. Well, because of the musical choices, the camera choices, or whatever it is. So that was very, very important to me that you could flick this film on, and this could have been made in the 70s. You know, that would have been, you know.
This could have been made in the 30s, or even going back to D.W. Griffith in the 20s.
Right, that's very kind.
It is extremely timeless in its look, in its stylization, but also in the themes within this story. This story is so topical for today with the idea of divisiveness over immigration, refugees, and even feminism, still to a point. You got all these guys, and they really don't want to listen to Eva. They really don't. And you can feel that. But she never gives up. She stands her ground. And you can see her, Odessa's performance is so incredible. As, you know, she pulls her shoulders back and she plants herself when she stands and speaks. On the beach, she plants herself. And there is not a wind in the world that is going to come and knock her down. It's so fascinating to watch this and to know it's set in the 1870s or 80s. And be as timely then as it is today with what we face in the world today. And I love that. So visually and tonally and story-wise, the whole thing is timeless, Thor. The entire thing. It's wonderful. Now, I'm curious because you have a definite color palette happening here, which one might not think with ice and snow and things like that, but you have a definite color palette happening here, much of which we find within Helen Beaumont's costuming and the fabrications that are used. So I'm curious about the color palette you came up with and utilizing the fabric. And of course, bloodshed. It's, you know, we got horror, we got bloodshed. So we've always got to have some nice red blood. But how did you develop the natural color palette but still give us some actual color, but it fits with the location and the story?
Yeah, it's slowly as you start working. working with your collaborators and it became what the exteriors look like and what the interiors look like. We started to feel like a lot of blues, a lot of earthy colors, a lot of brown, earthy, warm colors. So that all the men, they're wearing very brownish, warm, kind of earthy colors. Eva has multiple layers of blue.
Mm-hmm.
She dresses, everything she wears is blue, 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 blue. And so the closer she is to the end, the darker she becomes, and then she's obviously covered in blood and all of that in the end. But she's more put together in the beginning, and she's less put together in the end, in the way she dresses and the way she just throws stuff on. So you're just trying to tell a story, and if you can tell it through color. You could say that the yellow light of the interiors could be, warm and safe. But then again, you have these, shadows that are mm-hmm. in the corners within the safe space. So it's you just hope that your ideas are helping you take the story forward, and so it was very deliberate in the colors we chose, in the costuming, in the production design, and like you said, the coloring of the exteriors versus the interiors.
I've got to talk to you about the huts themselves, the structures
yes.
that were built and designed, because obviously they might be a little bit bigger than original ones that would have been standing in the 1800s.
Yes.
In terms of getting any of your equipment in there, your cameras, and if you were using any lighting packages in addition to candlelight. So how did you work with Frosty in designing those huts to accommodate your actors and equipment, unless you were going really bare bones and you didn't need to bring in lighting packages or anything?
Between the buildings we had on location, and we set up a mini studio in an old fishnet factory that we found in a fishing village. There was a fishnet factory that was not being used, and we built our interior set in that factory. And so we were able to have complete control over all our interior scenes. And then we had, as you do, minimal control on the set that we shot next to the ocean and the elements.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I just on an indie budget, that is a big ask to say I want to build the interior on a stage. But I felt that the control we had and how we were able to move the camera and tell the story in a more specific way because I like to move the camera. I like to follow Eva.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to go into tight spaces that we would never have been able to do. But you move a wall on the stage,
mm-hmm.
get the camera there, and follow Eva there. So it is just that marriage of Frosty. I mean, what a fantastic visionary. And I think you watch this, and I think you would think this is a real hut in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
It's so beautifully designed.
Yeah, I mean, everything. I've got one last question for you, Thor. Your first mm-hmm. feature narrative directorial. You directed mm-hmm. Valhalla Murders, episodic television. What did you learn as a filmmaker in making this feature that you can now take forward into future projects? And will you do another feature? I hope.
I mean, maybe with your help, by getting the word out there, people might say, let's give him another chance. So I'd love to make another film. That would be the dream scenario. What's the difference between TV and film? I mean, I guess the first thing that comes to mind is time.
Mm-hmm.
There's more pages in TV that you have to deliver than you have to deliver on a film.
Mm-hmm.
The time is just different. So when I did my show, it was a show I created. So I developed the show and I directed four 4 out of the 8 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was my little baby from beginning to end. And, you know, maybe the difference between that and this is that, because I wasn't a director for hire, I can imagine if you're a director for hire and you're showing up on a TV show set, you just have to deliver. You got to get those pages done. You got to get them done by the day. There's no coming back to this location. You got to get her done. And there's like so many pages you got to get done. And I just think the mindset of a film, it's the same. It's just, I think time is different. You know, you have less pages a day. And I think that gives you the chance to go for another take or to add more angles to the shot or get your vision across, if one can say.
Mm-hmm. Would you shoot in ice and snow again?
Oh, yeah, in a heartbeat.
Oh, Thor, this has been so lovely getting to speak with you about The Damned. This, as I said, it is chilling, it is beautiful, it is terrifying. I just think it's glorious. I really love the emotional and visual impact of this film. And I want to see more from you.
Well, I'll go make another one.
Please.
And we can chat straight away afterwards.
Please do. I'd appreciate that. Thor, thank you so, so much. And I hope you have a wonderful holiday season.
You too. Have a nice Christmas.
Bye-bye.